The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be with all of you on this fine day. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host for the program, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how you doing?
Hi, Bob. It's beautiful here in Coos Bay, about 65 and sunny. Now we're going to have a heat wave. And for us, a heat wave is 82 degrees. So it's going to be 82 degrees here for a couple of days. And we're all complaining about it. And, and then it's going to get back down to the 60s. So we're, looking forward to this heat wave for a couple of days and, happy to be here.
Well, we're flirting with 90 today. So don't feel so bad, Peter. And we might flirt with 90 again tomorrow. It's been humid, although it's going to be dry heat tomorrow and probably on Sunday. So we're getting to summer. That's for sure. Before we continue, I would like to thank Mitch Pomerantz for filling in last week as our co-host. Mitch, that was much appreciated. You did a great job filling Peter's shoes. Of course, we're very happy to have Peter back, but I just wanted to acknowledge you, Mitch, for the wonderful job you did for us last week. I want to thank other people who have made it possible for In Perspective to be available to us. We start out with Peter from Canada. Thank you very much for posting our shows on one of your chat boards. We appreciate it. Raymond Gay, our editor and producer, thank you for what you do. We appreciate that as well. Our media sources, thank you for airing us. It's much appreciated. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you very much for archiving our programs on my website. In order for people to find those shows, they must go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down till you get to In Perspective Podcast. Click on them. And you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Donna, who is our host for today's program, along with Brad, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed, let me give out my email address for people who wish to write us here at In Perspective. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's all one word, by the way. bobbranco93@gmail.com. There are four faithful listeners that I would like to say hi to today. They are as follows: Rick Troiano, Anthony Candela, Linda Lambert, and Roanna Backus. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate your support. We have with us today Mike Capps. He is a professional sports broadcaster, twice published author. From what I understand, he's about to be a author for the third time. Very good, Mike. Mm-hmm. And, you also have a role, which you will explain later, in covering at NASA activities. We're going to talk further about that later on in the program. But first of all, let me welcome you back to In Perspective. Welcome.
Bob, as you well know, you and I have been together on these programs, gosh, for the last 10 years that I know of.
It seems that way.
it may seem that way, but no matter how long it's been, it's always a thrill and an honor to be with you and all your guests and Peter, and you guys just do such a great job. And I'll never turn you down because I feel so strongly about the mission you guys are on and the work you do and the fact that you do so many things for the unsighted is just absolutely spectacular.
Well, thank you very much for your kindness, Mike. And of course, you do fine work as well, and we appreciate all that you do. But I appreciate, and I'm sure Peter does as well, your kind thoughts about us. Thank you.
I appreciate it. And there was a story that came out this week that I was thinking about you because you're going to be a guest and so on and so forth. And it has to do with the relative popularity in this country between baseball and soccer. I don't know if you saw this. But right now, according to the Wall Street Journal, soccer is slightly more popular than baseball, which I find astounding given the way baseball was when I was growing up, and probably you too and Bob, where baseball was the king of the universe, and now it's sort of, you know, a niche sport. I was curious to know which, if you have any thoughts about that,
Tons of thoughts about that. Major League Baseball, and now to a certain extent, Minor League Baseball, Major League has long been, a harbinger for running prices up to the point where the old standard family of four is going to spend $400 or $500 a night going to a big league game. Okay. All right. Now Minor League Baseball has taken that up. There are teams in the leagues that I have been in the last 31 years, who now, when they started, it was a relatively cheap date. You could get in and out for maybe $50, $60, maybe less. But now, they're beginning to charge for parking at $15 to $20 a shot. I'm familiar with one operation that has a beer garden where you can buy a $25 beer, 24 ounce beer, $25, and it's a minor league operation.
That's highway robbery.
It is highway robbery. And how are you, you know, and all, there are all these leagues that these kids play in, and they charge you a lot of money to play in them if you're picked. Oh, or if your family has money, and that's a drain. So if you're talking about middle class to lower middle class, you're talking about a lot of people in this country who came from across borders, who were raised on soccer, and young kids now coming up through the ranks whose families are better off than that. They're jumping in because it's not an expensive sport to play. Shoes, shorts, and whoever brings out the soccer balls, it's just cheaper. And plus, you know, we've seen a lot of movies and a lot of television programs about this sport, and it used to drive me nuts how slow it was, but the more I watched it, and
Mike, do we lose you? Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, I'm back.
There you are. Okay, go ahead, Mike. Continue.
Knucklehead stepped on the wrong. Never mind. I've begun to really understand it. My son is a rabid fan of the Tottenham Spur in England, and so I've begun to pick up on it, and the athleticism in it is next to none. You look at a soccer player, I don't care whether he's junior high or she, junior high, high school, college, professional, they are extremely athletic.
Mike?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
I hear you. You lost Michael.
Michael?
Again.
We lost you again, Michael.
In here because my hand is completely away from this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, now.
Go ahead.
Where was I?
You were talking about
a team in England and.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I become enamored with it. And, don't tell my wife, Karen, that the next time we go over to London, I'm getting a ticket. I'll buy her two if she wants to go, and I'm going to the Tottenham Spur.
I won't tell her.
Okay, good. So that's where we are. And I've become really enamored, and I can understand full well, Peter, why that sport has taken off so well.
So in other words, Mike, a lot of people get a big kick out of soccer.
Oh my heavens. Yeah. And I have a grandson that has played a little bit of little league ball, and he's learning to pitch underhand now, which I think is fantastic, but he's sort of into the soccer thing too. And I've got, a couple other grandkids that live, close to Dallas, Fort Worth, and they're into it. I mean, One plays, one doesn't. The other's a football player and a baseball player. And the one that likes the soccer is a tennis player. But they have a working knowledge of it. And so many are involved now. We have, you can drive the streets of Austin, Texas, where I live, on most any Saturday, Sunday, and you'll see 2/3 Little League and 1/3 soccer. You would never, in the last 10 years ago, you would never see young soccer players playing on those fields, especially at this time of the year. But there they are.
So it's a growing sport.
Oh, and just to add to what you were saying, Mike, I have 2 step grandkids, who are 13, and, you didn't mention goalie gloves as a requirement. One of my, twins is a, goaltender in soccer and is pretty good. Anyway, they love it and they could care less about baseball. Baseball is a non-sport to them. They, they kind of like the Savannah Bananas, which is, you know, sort of, show off baseball or whatever you want to call it, but they don't care about baseball at all. It's soccer and it's basketball and to a lesser extent football. Baseball is a non-sport around here. It's really interesting and I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's just different.
I'll give you another indicator. As to why we're all correct about this. In Massachusetts, they just passed a law allowing bars to stay open until 3 a.m. instead of 2 a.m. during the World Cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's meeting with some controversy, but I guess it's up to the individual cities and towns to back it up if they want to. I don't know.
But you know what? If I'm a bar owner and I can stay open to 3 and we're watching the World Cup, I'm probably going to go pay a cop off to let me last a little bit longer. But it's there and it's wonderful that kids now have another option that is as athletic, if not more, than baseball and football and appeals to a broad swath of youngsters in this country and out of this country. I just think it's fantastic.
So one other question before we move on.
Okay.
What do you think baseball needs to do to regain some of its popularity?
Peter, I don't know that they can.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. If you look at the number of people who attend, and they have great attendance in the major leagues, and there are some minor league venues that have great attendance, major league owners could care less as long as you spend your money.
Exactly.
And let me give you one other kick in the pants over this. Gambling is here with us, ladies and gentlemen, and that's because the owners have embraced it. You tell me where the gambling money goes, and I'll tell you what's up with it, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I do.
It's part of the problem that's plaguing this country, not just baseball. This is a huge, huge deal.
And I will turn a corner a second. I remember my dad when I was growing up, he came over here from Germany, was a huge soccer fan and soccer never really got, he said he could quite understand why soccer didn't take off. You know, he died in 2004 and soccer was still a relatively minor sport. And all of a sudden since he died, it's grown mammothly. And as you said, that's a good thing. But it's a new world.
Let me just also mention one of the things since you've mentioned your heat wave.
Yeah.
I live in Austin, north of the Gulf of Mexico, which means humidity.
Right.
It is 94 degrees today and I've been out for a walk and I sweated everything I had out.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time.
Oh, we lost you. We lost you, Michael.
No, you didn't.
Oh, there you are. Okay, you're back.
I don't know what's going on here. I tell you what, I'm going to push this computer completely out of the way. But anyway, I'm not done with Peter yet.
Go ahead.
He's given me, it's going to be 65. We're going to be up to 80.
I thought he said 80.
He did.
But I did.
It starts at 65, and I'm okay. down here roasting both sides of my backside, and he's saying, oh, it's going to get up to 90. Well, you know what? All I got's blanks for that.
Yeah, this is a really unusual place. It never gets to 90 up here. I said the high was going to be 82. And everybody's complaining about it. It's just funny. Cause I lived in Missouri and New York City and DC, and I know what summers are like. Let's turn a corner. We brought you on to talk about NASA. Talk about your experience at, how you got interested in NASA, your role as a journalist there and what you covered and that kind of stuff.
Well, Peter, and I've said this to you and I've said this to Bob. I'm probably the most fortunate person that ever went to work in the news business. When I was 10 years old, John Glenn came to deer hunt in my hometown of Fairfield, Texas, which is 90 miles south of Dallas and 161 miles north of NASA. I was in hog heaven. One of the original seven, a fighter pilot, Marine fighter pilot, in World War II, and an absolute gentleman. Now, I met him at age 10. I saw him two or three more times before I got out of high school. I'm in the news business, working in Dallas-Fort Worth. The first time I saw him in Washington, crossed paths with him. He was walking up the mall. I was going down the mall in D.C., and I hear, hey, Fairfield. And we had a grand chat. And then I saw him a couple of times when I was at CNN and did the same thing. So at age 10, I got hooked on NASA. I got hooked on everybody in that Mercury 7. And I mean, there's a list of them, you had Alan Shepard from the Navy. You had Deke Slayton, who was, had a heart problem and had to wait around till 75 to take a ride on Apollo Soyuz, that Apollo Soyuz deal they did U.S. and Russia. Walter Shirah was there. Scott Carpenter, John Glenn, we said, Gus Grissom, Gordon Cooper. But when I got to Houston as a 23-year-old police beat reporter, I was able to pick up some time covering NASA when Skylab came back and had a chance to interview Shepard and Slayton. And
1973, Skylab, right? 73?
That's when it went up. This was 79 when it came back.
Okay.
And just never lost my love for it. And the bottom line to the whole thing is these guys – I know some of you can remember when Walter Cronkite was doing the early morning shift when one of the rockets, whether it was the first, second, third, however many there were, that they shot off early in the morning from Cape Canaveral, and Cronkite was there cheerleading the whole thing. And I got a chance to meet him. He gave me an award, a journalism award, at the University of Texas when I was 27 years old. So there's this big whirlwind tornado, if you will, of what NASA has meant to me through the years and the people that I met and knew and covered. I had a cousin that flew on the fourth space shuttle mission. Unfortunately, I had to cover the Challenger disaster, and I knew every one of the people on that ride because I had a cousin that flew on the fourth space shuttle mission. So you see, there's a lot of synergy between a kid who grew up in a town of 1500 in East Texas and these guys, and learning to appreciate who they are and what they are and the things they did before they were chosen. And then as we moved along, it was so much fun to see them in their retirement and how they'd come back to NASA when there were big missions going on, and they'd sit and talk with us, reporters who really wanted to get to know them. I mean, they're just, they were just all American guys. And you know, most of that first group, the Mercury group, heck, they fought in World War II as fighter pilots and things. And, the whole thing NASA developed, if you'll remember, out of the Cold War space race between us and the Russians when Yuri Gagarin or whatever his name was, became the first man to fly in space, and he was Russian. And if you'll remember also, one of the things that John F. Kennedy challenged Americans with when he came during his time, the day he was inaugurated in 1961, was to challenge NASA to be bigger and better and shoot for the moon. And lo and be freaking hold if they didn't get to the moon before the Russians. And it was, I just was always swept up in it. And here I am 75 years old and I'm still swept up in it. And I'll always be swept up in it as long as I'm planted on terra firma here on Earth.
So one of the things you talked about, sort of, they're just all American guys, what I heard you say. Me, I remember I wasn't a journalist. I was just a kid, experiencing this. They struck me as larger than life. I remember Tang, you know, you drank, that was the astronaut drink.
Good.
I didn't meet any of these people, but they were really clearly extraordinary people. You can't be an average person and fly in space. How do you sort of square those two? I mean, they were all American. They may have been all American, but they certainly were not your average American.
No. They you're right. You're right about that. And I square it this way. You don't have to be a jerk being really brilliant and able to fly into space. It's really better to be a really nice dude, or a lady. I mean, Ride Sally Ride. I mean, I got a chance to talk to her a lot before she died. But they were so unlike many people would think they would be, being so smart and being in a situation where they're going to fly to the moon, they're going to fly a special mission out toward the moon or, whatever their job was. They always had time for news reporters. And anytime I would walk through NASA's, they have this great museum at NASA. And I would just say, if you ever get a chance, sighted or not, there are places where you can listen to the things that happen and you'll get a good feel for what that place is. And at the end of the day, I think NASA is one of the most spectacular organizations that has ever happened on the face of this earth, and certainly on the face of the USA.
And so, Mike, go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you mentioned that these people were genuinely nice people. And I would imagine that if you're in a capsule with two or three other people, you better be nice. You better be able to play the sandbox well. Otherwise, you're going to run into trouble. And I'm sure that's one of the things they screened for.
Well, it was. And I had a cousin, as I told you, that went up on one. And he said the number of jerks that I'm going up with on the fourth space shuttle is non-existent. They're great, great people.
They have to be.
Yeah, and I knew every one of those people that went up on the Challenger, and so brokenhearted when that teacher died,
Krista McAuliffe.
Yes, Krista McAuliffe. I knew Dr. Judy Resnick. I met her at my cousin's house. Dick Scobie, who was a commander. I mean, just genuine. Dr. Ronald McNair. It was incredible just to sit and talk. And you know what? It was, how do you do what you do in the media as much as it was? How do you do as much as you do flying a space shuttle, or what you do as a payload commander or whatever in that particular situation? And you know that, of course, they had that big problem with Apollo 13 before this, and that was, we almost lost some guys there, and then, of course, they lost the shuttle Columbia in 03, which was another tragedy. I have this vague hope that we'll get space shuttles back. I just don't know how much, given the situation, let me try not to get political here, but given the situation we have in the United States, I don't know how we'd ever get funding for space shuttles. However, it looks like Elon Musk, who's going to be, bigger than a billionaire, a trillionaire, is going to come through with some money for his own private whatever. And I'm not in favor of that. I think this country needs to allow NASA to do what it needs to do in space. But apparently this cowboy is going to, put all the money he needs to shoot off a rocket with people in it. And I'm not the biggest Musk fan to start out with, but that's another story for another time.
Bob, you want to add something? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to divert just a little bit because we've been hearing that we're going to be revisiting the moon, and I'm trying to figure out why at this particular point are we interested in going back there. I know it's a little bit involved. They're talking about moon stations and moon bases, to detect, I don't know, some kind of enemy situations. I've heard little things like this. What's going on with our revisit to the moon?
See, I think the revisit is fine. And let me tell you why. Number one is if you're going to use the moon as a way to shoot missiles back at some enemy, you're in the wrong business. We're in the wrong business in this country for a lot of reasons right now. And that as a former reporter who covered politics for the 24 years I was in the news business, it's wrong. But here is what I have heard and read about that has nothing to do with an armed conflict with China or anybody else. This is not what they're trying to do is establish bases on the moon as a relay to get them out to Mars. That's what I've read into this and heard people say and read it in publications.
So I want to go back very briefly to the, there are, of course, astounding successes. You know, we talked about that, and we talked about a little bit about the, you know, the calamitous failures, those two things you're talking about.
Yes.
You were a journalist back then. There was a lot of talk about sort of the culture was, did not at that time like people who did disagree with the main, you know, with the thing. They didn't like people saying, hey, there's a problem here. They didn't like, you know, folks who disagreed. There's a term for this, which I can't remember. Anyway, what was your experience with that? When you were covering those tragic events, what did you hear about that, or what did you recognize or see?
Well, let me back up a second. I did not cover the one in 03. I was already 4 years into a baseball.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
But the things that people are people, and they're going to stand up for what they believe in. And no, they didn't like the criticism, but you know what? They got it and they learned to deal with it, and they found out they had to deal with it.
Yeah.
So they got on board with the program. I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, there are none of the original seven astronauts that are still alive now, but I imagine if one or two of them, and especially John Glenn, was alive, he would say, you know, get over yourselves. Mistakes were made. Humans make mistakes. We know when we climb in one of these vehicles, whether it was Apollo or any of the others before the space shuttles came along, we knew how dangerous they were. I mean, think about this. Gus Grissom burned to death in a run up to what should have been his, the second American in space. I mean, he was the second American in space. And then there was this, Gemini vehicle that they were practicing on, and two of the astronauts escaped. And Gus Grissom, who I met once, was a great dude. I mean, and you hate to lose those kind of people. And then there's a story about, I'm trying to search for the name here. Anyway, Jim Lowell, who was one of three astronauts that were in sort of a dust up. That was part of that Apollo 13, I believe. Yeah, it's Apollo 13. And there were mistakes made there. And Lovell didn't like the TV movie that was made in 1974 about it and really bitched and moaned about it. But you know what? When Ronnie Howard came back with that movie that had Tom Hanks in it about Apollo 13, Lowell was one of the people who came out every time they were filming and made suggestions and helped them get it right. So there's a dichotomy here of, yeah, you're a human being and one of your mates got killed, or maybe eight of them or seven of them or whatever, and you're pissed off about it. But hey, at the end of the day, you get the greatest organization in the world doing this, as long as politicians don't stifle it or ruin it some other way. And I think as smart as they are and as astute as they are, I just simply think that they, especially the older guys, got to the point of, we got to do this and we're going to do it right. And we're not going to criticize. We're going to say, obviously there were problems and we all have problems. You get in one of those vehicles and they're going a gajillion miles an hour. You know, you can have the best engineers in the world and the best pilots in the world and the best staff in the world, and you can still have a mistake and a thing blow up.
Yeah.
And this is not riding on Southwest Airlines, to the moon. That's not what this is. This is a completely different animal.
So we had all this success in space and the space shuttles and everything else. And NASA seemed, what happened to NASA? I mean, you know, it was this great organization as you talk about, and nothing, I just find it weird, as someone who knows little about this, that in 1969 and the early 70s, we went to the moon and we didn't build on that. And now all of a sudden we're sort of going back. What happened? What happened that we didn't get? We had this 60-year gap before we sort of went back to this whole thing.
My opinion, well, I think it was quite 60, because they were running space shuttles all the way up into the 90s.
Right, I agree. I'm sort of thinking about, you know, the trips to the moon and
right, the shuttles were just orbiting.
Yeah, but Mike's right, and because we're also thinking about those unmanned space to Mars that were spectacular, and other places that got us all kinds of data. So I shouldn't be so doctrinaire about it, but it just seems to, we sort of lost our mojo or something, at least to some degree. And I hope that we can get it back.
Peter, how many times have you lost your mojo listening to politicians talk?
All the time.
I think we just answered the question.
Yeah, that's fair.
So about Mars. I mean, we keep hearing that we're going to go to Mars. How long would it take to get to Mars? I think that's a very logical question.
Oh, my God. That's the one I didn't study, Bob. It has to be in terms of a year and a half to get there. But you'd have to stop at the moon. Obviously, that's why they're talking about putting those bases there. So you caught me off guard with that. And I don't know if I can find any way to, all right. Just,
I know it's a long trip.
Well, it is. But hold on. I'm going to try to.
And, talking about people being in the same place in a quiet, in a small space for a year and a half, you better be relatively nice. Otherwise you're gonna have trouble.
Yeah. They're not going to be able to leave you at the Greyhound.
Exactly.
Out of the middle of Texas.
Not going to work. So I'm going to go back.
Ask your question. I'm going to go back to find that. I'm really upset. I'm going to get you an answer on that distance.
Okay. But I want to come back because it seems that this whole idea of sort of government being the driving force behind this space exploration is not happening as much. We are subcontracting this out to other people to do this. I think you're not very happy with that. Talk about that a little more. What makes you unhappy? And, you know, will it work even though we're not happy with it?
All right. Let me get you down. Let me go back. Since I'm ADHD and if I don't do this, I'll forget it. Okay.
Yeah.
Distance between Mars and Earth is constantly changing, ranging from 33.9 million miles at their closest to roughly 250 million miles at their farthest. Because both planets orbit the sun at different speeds, their distance varies greatly. So you're talking about, what is that? That's got to be 40 times farther from Earth to the moon or thereabouts. Okay. All right.
So if it takes, how long does it take to get to the moon? 4 days? Is that right?
Yeah, this is going to take. It's going to take at least a year. So having said that, and what was it? What was the second part of your question?
I want you to sort of talk about this whole idea of, you know, NASA was totally government run, had many successes. And now it appears that government sort of subcontracting out to, people with lots and lots and lots and lots of money. And I could see that causing some trouble.
I think that we have only scratched the surface of that. And now we have politicians tied into some of those people.
Yeah.
And I can sit here. I could. I'm not going to do it. I could sit here and talk for 30 minutes about what a bad idea, having those two meet in the middle. I'm talking about billionaires, almost a trillionaire now, and senators and representatives, U.S. House representatives. I just think that's a dangerous road, Ho, for many reasons. I mean, we're seeing all sorts of stuff that goes on under the table now. What's it going to be like if, let's just say the guy who's going to be the trillionaire, decides he's going to take over the whole thing and we've already appropriated X billion dollars to get ourselves up there. I'm really, really concerned. I'm disheartened in a way because I would have hoped that politicians would have fought for this, more so over the last 20 years than they have and haven't done any kind of fighting other than we're seeing some activity. We're going to see some more here over the next, 2 months as they launch a rocket into space with people in it. But it's golly, I really want to say some stuff that I can't say.
Yeah.
And get us all into trouble, but just suffice it to say, it's going to be a long haul to Mars, and I hope it'll be our government leading the way, and I'm afraid it won't be. And that I just don't think.
I don't want to get. I feel your uneasiness, and the only thing I would say about it is we seem to have lost our faith in institutions, government being number one, but other institutions as well. And there's lots of reasons for that. Sometimes government makes poor choices and we can go down that philosophical path, but until we can rebuild that trust, I don't see how we can do much of anything without, infusions of private sector, know how. And
yeah, that's right. I think you're right. I just regret it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
That's fine. But I, you know, this is an issue that we're struggling with as a country. Bob, do you want to see if there are any questions out there?
Yes. Before we get to that, I just want to mention briefly, this is episode number 468, dated Friday, June 12th, 2026. And our guest is Mike Capps, baseball broadcaster, author, news reporter. He's into a lot of different projects. So let me turn to Donna and ask her if there are any hands raised.
Oh,
so we
yes.
can get our participants involved.
Absolutely. We have Mitch Pomerantz.
Welcome, Mitch.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And I got to say, Mike, as much as I agreed with last week's guest, you and I disagree about 180 degrees today. I've been a space nut since I was seven, and I started reading, I think it was Isaac Asimov's Lucky Star series. And I've been reading science fiction since that age. Used to read Galaxy magazine. All of the golden age of science fiction authors posited that spaceflight would flourish under private ownership. It's because the self same politicians that you and I and most every other thinking person criticizes, it's because of that that space flight is going private and has gone private, because it is the whims of the politicians that either give NASA the money it needs or takes it away. And it's because of that that folks, regardless of whether we like them or not, the Jeff Bezoses and the Elon Musks are going to take over space flight. It's why NASA has so many, the government and NASA have so many contracts out with Elon Musk. I am pleased to say that I have gotten in on the IPO of SpaceX because I believe the future of space flight is going to be with these people, and you just have to put their nonsensical politics aside and understand that they're the ones with the determination, the drive, the money, and the know-how to get us to Mars. And by the way, I think it's a vague recollection, but I believe that at the shortest distance between the Earth and Mars, the trip there from here will be something like 8 or 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way. It's been a while since I read that number, but I believe it's 8 or 9 months. And the last thing I'll say is I hope that everyone who has any interest in space flight and in NASA, by the way, gets a chance to see the movie Hidden Figures.
Oh, yeah.
Which mm-hmm. I did three years back at, I think we saw it at the ACB convention, as a matter of fact. So those are just my thoughts. You know, I used to agree, Mike, that NASA was the way to go. But I think that given the times we're in and everybody's concerned about where our money is being spent, and it ought to be spent on Earth and not in some frivolous nonsense in space, that it's only going to be the private sector that moves us to where we all want to go, and that's to make sure that we don't leave all our eggs in one basket, meaning the Earth, that we are spread out and we do colonize other parts of the solar system. So thanks a lot. Good program as always, Mr. Branko and Peter.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you very much.
I will just say one thing. Money, yes. Know-how, I don't know. I don't know. I have to see it to believe it. But you know what? I'm a cynic about some things, and I appreciate Mitch's perspective on it. Certainly do. I'd like to sit down with him for about an hour and talk. There's some things that that really make me uncomfortable. This know-how thing is, I don't know. I don't know if you've seen any of the launches from down here in South Texas, and there have been some Lulus. I wouldn't want my kids or grandkids to get home, I'll tell you that right now. But that's, we'll move along and do something else.
Yeah. All right. Donna, do we have anyone else?
We do. We have one more hand at this moment, and it is Janine. Janine, you may unmute.
Hello, Janine. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just curious. What is our fascination with Mars?
Good question. I like that question very much. I like a lot of questions, but that one there is especially good.
Janine, I could have gotten out of this 15 minutes ago and been okay. I just think in having watched all of this develop, I think this is the first real effort to show people that we might be able to colonize on the moon. We might be able to colonize on Mars.
But no oxygen on the moon?
Of course you got to have oxygen, but we have oxygenated houses right now. I mean, I'm just talking about establishing a base up there. I don't know what you would do, but the other side of it is, Mars makes less sense to me than, you know, going to the moon anyway, but this is where you saw so many. I can remember being 6, 7, 8 years old and these guys talking about what's possible, what might be possible as NASA gets itself heated up and does what it needs to do. I think that 20 or 30 year hole really cost us or cost NASA. But gee whiz, Mars is so far away. And until we can see, if you can prove to me that in some other solar systems that might somehow be reasonable in the, over the next 50, 60 years, then I might say, well, let's try it. I just can't get, I'm sort of like Jenny. I'm going like, what are we doing in Mars? Well, everybody said we need to go to Mars. Well, I don't know who everybody was, but if you two have some kind of idea about, I got no clue about it because I just don't know what the kick would be other than to turn around, with two astronauts from the U.S. and two from Russia sitting in a bar. And going nanny nanny boo boo to the other one, you know, because we got to Mars and you didn't. And that's the only thing I can fit. I just don't know what you gain going to Mars.
Well, personally, I can think of.
In thinking, I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, personally, I can think of so much good and other places that money could be spent.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Rather than on maybe getting to Mars with a big maybe. I've just never understood it, but thank you.
Well, thank you very much for listening.
And I guess my, you know, I'm not really a science fiction guy, but you know, all the stuff about the man from Mars and is there's life on Mars and you know, what, there's, you know, all kinds of science fiction that was centered around Mars. Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of the romance of it more than anything else. Yeah. I'm sure there are people, who have, might have a different take on it. I guess my question is, we've had some success in going to Mars with unmanned, capsules or rockets or whatever they are and getting lots of useful information. Why men? You know, why was humans going there to colonize? It isn't clear to me scientifically how valuable it might be. I can see us, mining stuff off of Mars, you know,
sure.
Valuable metals of some kind. I could see that easily. I'm just not fully convinced that, you know, putting people up there because we can is, there may be a better reason than just because we can, I guess is what
I'm
saying.
But why would we want to mine something somewhere that it takes 9 months to get to?
Because if it's really valuable metal or metal, something that we can't get on Earth, that might be really valuable in ways that we don't understand, it might be worth it.
Well, I don't think the temperatures are appropriate for colonizing anyway. The temperatures are very extreme on Mars.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. But you have all these science fiction stories, right, about people going to this planet or that planet and heat traps and whatever else. Mitch can talk about that far more than I can. But, you know, I think that's really where this whole thing got started, was we all read those books. And yeah, going to Mars would be really cool. And maybe it would be. I'm just not convinced.
They're with you. I'm right there with you. It makes me a little bit nervous to just think about it, you know, so.
Well, and sort of getting back to the whole issue of mining, I could see the private sector, if they found something they thought would be really valuable, then there's a, you know, then there's a chance to make a lot of money. Then it might be worth it if the cost benefit, you know, pans out. But anyway, I guess we'll find out. And I'm afraid Mitch is right. You know, I mean, I can't see the government having so much budgetary issues. I just can't see us spending the money we need to make this work, but I could be wrong.
Well, I don't think you are. If you look and see how much work does not get done by those in charge.
Yeah.
No, we sit, either not responding to each other or we fight. And that's sort of the way it goes. And meanwhile,
and I guess like one other thing on this topic, I never thought I would see this, but now we're getting people on the left saying we can't live like this with money wise. Our budget is getting out of whack. We're going to have to do something serious. I never thought I'd see the day when some folks on the left hand side of the spectrum would be saying things like this, but it's beginning to even get to that level. And if that continues, we're going to be talking a lot about cutting back, not on, increasing, you know, money towards, you know, things like space travel.
Yep. I think
any other hands, Donna?
At this point, we do not have any hands and we've got about 7 minutes left.
Okay.
If somebody raises their hands, you know that works, Donna. Let us know. Interrupt us.
Absolutely.
You're good at doing that. So
Mike. I was going to ask Mike a quick question. So do you think there are any UFOs out there?
My God, Bob. I used to have this discussion with my kids at night. And it was always like they were always getting into bed like 10 or 15 or 30 minutes late. And then we'd sit and have a discussion about it. And the next thing you know, they're up in the middle of the night. They're all upset because the UFOs are maybe taking them away. And no, I don't think there are. I would be stunned. And I can guarantee you, if we open this up to a lot of callers across this country, I would be the underneath a bus hiding from those who wanted to take me on with that. There've been all sorts of reports, and you guys know this. I just saw one. It came over my stock tank out here on 3 miles outside of town.
And I am letting you know, we just have a hand raised. Carla
Let's take
Hayes.
It.
Who is it?
Carla Hayes. Hi, Carla.
Hello.
Hello. I'm really enjoying this. I can't get enough of space and science fiction and all that. And thank you. This has been so interesting listening to this. But my question is, I'd like to piggyback on you saying that there weren't any, if you don't believe there are any UFOs. Do you believe that we are the only ones in the whole universe, or do you think there are other worlds with intelligent life? And I'm just asking, I know you have no way of really knowing, but what is your personal feeling about it?
I would say this. I do not have the mental capabilities to be able to dream that dream. But, you know, there are so many galaxies out there and so that we haven't even really found. I'm not going to be stupid enough to say, no, you know, this is the only one because God said it. And, this, you know, God's a lot bigger than a lot of people think. And I can't think in those terms simply because I haven't seen it. But I'm not going to say it doesn't exist because I do not know.
There's always speculation about
it. My sense, and again, I don't know any more than anybody else does, is that there probably are things out there that we don't know about, a life form of some kind. You know, it's such a vast universe, that I would be surprised if we were the only one, but you know, what that life form might look like, who knows? You know, that's another major vein of science fiction.
Have another hand.
So, okay. All right, let's take it. Thank you, Carla.
Deanna Noriega.
Deanna. Hello. Welcome.
Weber's, Out of the Darkness. And if you follow his theories, they stand back and watch to see whether we'll kill each other off before we finally grow up and learn to cooperate planet-wide and act as a unified race of beings rather than fighting borders and doing all sorts of stuff. And as our technology gets bigger and meaner, then eventually we'll implode and kill ourselves off and make room for the intelligent cockroach or whatever comes next. Oh,
what a charming way to end the show, Deanna.
I haven't ended a show ever with a cockroach.
Well, I'm just saying that until we grow up as a species, we're not going to make much of our world. We've practically destroyed it as it is. So, I think she'll get darn mad at us, Mother Earth, and give us a good kicking and say, grow up and stop all of this idiocy.
Of course, we haven't talked about how AI fits into all this, but that's a
whole other thing. Oh, I'm glad you brought up that subject. Oh boy.
I think our time is up. Thank you for.
Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you.
AI's going to take away. AI's ruining our economy. I'll go public with that statement. That's too bad, though. As good as it is.
That's great. What time
so, Mike, you have a third book coming out. We have only got about another minute, but you can just give us a preview before we wrap it up if you want to.
My father, Confessor, actually broadcast the Ice Bowl in Green Bay.
Oh, wow.
On January 31st, 1967. That was the same day my father died. This guy became the original voice of the Texas Rangers, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys, voice of the Chicago White Sox. And better than that, he spent 44 years teaching and coaching young people how to broadcast. We lost him in March of 25 at age 99. And I just scratched the surface with this guy. It's going to take me a while to finish this thing because I got to be honest with you. Every now and again, I have to stop and cry.
We could always have you back when the book is out. We can talk more about it at that time. But unfortunately, we are out of time today. Mike Capps, thank you so much for coming back and being on our program. We learned a lot from you.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Thank you. And thanks everyone else for helping us out today, and go safe with God's abundant blessings, everyone. Take care.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you having difficulty with your eyesight? Are you losing your vision? Are you afraid of what comes next? If you're blind or visually impaired, contact Mass Commission for the Blind to find out if you're eligible to register for services. Learn new skills to reclaim your independence. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
This is not a public service announcement. This is a one-minute mystery.
Regardless of a person's nationality, race, religion, or politics, what is the one thing that all wise people agree is between heaven and earth? ¶¶
And here's the solution to our mystery.
Between heaven and earth is the word and.
And now back to our regular programming.